So our key text this morning is found in Mark chapter 4, verses 35 to 41. Let me see that up. It says, that day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. As a furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped, Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the storm, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the winds died down and it was completely calm. And he said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." An amazing thing, eh? Now, there's a lot we can learn from this passage about faith, about Christ, and about ourselves. A quick read through it shows us the different reactions to the same storm based on their level of faith. We see we have Jesus, who has perfect faith, sound asleep in the back of the boat. You have the disciples with less than perfect faith, terrified and freaking out. And then, did you catch that there's other boats? If you read on, there's no mention of them going on to the other shore. They don't arrive. So we can use them as an illustration for people who have heard the message, but with no faith, when the going got tough, they turned the boat around and headed back for shore, for the comfortable things they knew. You know, that in itself would make for a great message. But today I want us to go deeper. It would be easy for us to read through this passage and look down on the disciples and think, man, where was their faith? They had Jesus right there in the boat. And likewise, it's easy for us to look at somebody we know who's going through a storm and going, they just need a little faith. And the truth of it is that you're probably right. But in reality, when you're in the midst of that storm, mustering even a little faith can be difficult. It can feel like a monumental feat just to come up with just the tiniest amount of faith. And if it's a really big storm that just keeps on going, it can be downright impossible and make us feel like we're all alone out on the waters. You know, you're out there in the middle of the Atlantic, no shore in sight, no other boats around, no cell reception to call somebody. It's just you and those in the boat with you, out and alone. So today I invite you to join me as we get our feet wet. We're going to jump into the boat with these disciples for a brief time. So let's put ourselves in their shoes for a minute. Experience what they experience and learn what they learn from Christ himself about faith and dealing with the storms of life. Now, to better understand this passage, we need a little bit of context to really grasp it. We need to know who these guys are as a group of men and where they are in their faith journey. So this book is or this chapter is about a quarter of the way through the book of Mark. So at this point, they've been following and living with Jesus for a while. They've witnessed many healings and other miracles. They've stood and listened to Jesus teach. They've had those quiet, intimate moments with him alone where he explained them. You know, they weren't new by any means, right? You know, they watched as he put his deity on display many times and exercised that authority over demons and natural elements, as we see here. So they obviously had enough faith to be able to walk away from their families, walk away from their professions, walk away from the lives that they knew, walk away from everything they held dear to follow the one who is the Christ. So they weren't completely green. In fact, being human, it's quite possible that they had enough experience and teaching to make them a little bit prideful. You know, you picture yourself standing up there. You've been with Jesus all this time, and you're his chosen 12 standing behind the man. Right? You can see how a little bit of pride could set in. So perhaps a dose of reality and the opportunity to show these disciples exactly where their faith stood was maybe the motivation behind this experience. So on this day, Jesus was teaching from a boat to a large crowd that had gathered on the shore. And he taught about faith and the kingdom of God through the parables of the sower and the lampstand, the growing seed and the mustard seed. Now, if you're familiar with these passages, you know how they each give illustration to the way faith grows, the way it's multiplied, some of the challenges it faces, and even what we're supposed to do with our faith. And as evening approached, and Jesus says, you know, that's when he starts out. He says, you know, let's go to the other side. Let's get away from here. So this set the stage for what would become a long and terrifying night out on the Sea of Galilee. Now the disciples, they were used to being out on the water in these shallow, open-sided fishing boats that they use of the day. I mean, they were all fishermen. You can see an image of them here. This is actually built on a reconstruction of a frame that they had found at the bottom of the Sea of Galilee, dated to this period of time. So they've been, you know, well acquainted with life at sea, with the waters. Even the ones that weren't fishermen, just, you know, traveling around, it was a common means of transportation. So they would have been used to it. They would have been used to the storms and knew how quickly they could rise out on the sea. But without the modern marine forecasts and radar and satellites and all the other gizmos and gadgets that we've got to help navigate today, they would have had no way of knowing the storm that was coming. So as night fell, the wind started to pick up and a powerful storm opened up upon them. The waves were so big they started crashing over the sides of the boat and filling it with water so that it nearly swamped. Now it would have been absolutely terrifying to be out in a storm like this during the day, but at night, when you've got no visual reference, you've got no way of seeing anything, you have no way of seeing where the waves is going to come in at you, it would have been absolutely terrifying. They would have been completely disoriented as each wave just pummeled the side of the boat and sent them, you know, be like a small kid's toy in the bathtub. And with so much water in the boat, it would have been incredibly difficult to control. I mean, fill up with water, and then every time a wave came and rocked the boat, all the water would rush from one side to the other, and it would feel like it was going to roll at any minute. You know, if anybody has ever been out in a boat, in a small craft, even in moderate waves, and taken on water, perhaps you can relate a little bit to what they're experiencing at this time. But storms aren't just a weather event, though, right? We use them as a metaphor to describe the struggles we experience in life. Inevitably, in every life, we all experience storms. As we encounter these storms and come to the other side, though, we learn from our experiences and our ability to work through these painful circumstances increases. I once saw a sign that described this perfectly. It said, "Experience is something you gain just after you need it." How true is that, eh? Like these experienced sailors and the storms that they would encounter out on the water, we get to the point that where the something that would have scared the pants off us at one point, you know, we can now take in stride. But every now and then, a new storm strikes that's so severe and so long-lasting that our boat begins to fill with water and brings on fear and causes us to lose hope in our ability to survive the storm. You know, perhaps it's one of those 100-year storms, one that's so severe that they may only happen once in our lifetime. In my own life, Sherry and I have experienced just such a storm. There was a time when I would have told you that I had great faith, and I believed fully in Jesus' ability to carry me through anything that I would encounter in life. You know, these might sound like prideful words, but they weren't empty by any means. Sherry and I had both come through major storms in life before, with Sherry losing her first husband and my first marriage ending in divorce. And together, as husband and wife, we've also experienced many difficulties together. including the disappointments and stress of a failed business and the bankruptcy that often follows. But through it all, we hung to one verse. We hung to Romans 8:28. See it there. It says, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose." Because we know that He uses all things, not just the good things, not just the things we like, not just things we want. He uses all things, good and bad, right? It's all for our good. So from our experiences, these storms that we've come through in life, we knew the truth in this. But following the better part of 3 years in ministry, where Sherry and I ran a daily after school program over in DeBert for kids, we served as the directors running Camp Pegwiak. We ran youth groups in as many as 4 separate communities at one time. We were carting our family around as we traveled 3 out of every 4 Sundays each month to a different church for me to preach at. You know, we were exhausted. And that's when our storm hit the hardest. As with many missionary positions, and Luke, I pray that this never happens to you as you enter into yours, but as with any missionary positions, a large part of our income was dependent upon the generosity of others. And, you know, we very much enjoyed what we were doing, and we had the opportunity to witness God do some amazing, amazing things. So numerous, numerous children come to Christ. And it just, the thing, like, stories I could go on are just endless. God did a mighty work, and we were there to witness it. But when December came and we only had $78 come in for the month in support, it was too much for us to take. We made the painful decision to step down from ministry and began looking for work. And one would have thought that this experience was dark enough, but that was only the beginning. For the next 8 months of being unemployed, they were the hardest period of my life. We experienced great financial hardship. I battled depression, lost faith in myself, and at times faith in God, as I struggled with doubts about His love and faithfulness and kindness. At times I was angry and yelled at God, was scared, was hurt, ran away from Him. And then in the very next breath, came crawling back on my knees, crying, begging Him to forgive me. It took a toll on my family, on my marriage, and my friends, as those closest to us struggled to find words to encourage us, while at the same time trying to wrestle with the reality of our pain and the love and goodness that they knew God extends to all His children. Being unable to fill my role as a provider and protector of my family, it humbled me greatly as I had to reach out and ask others for help. It shook me to the core. It damaged my sense of self-worth, killed my confidence, even my hope for a better tomorrow, which was usually the thing that comforted me and carried me through the night, was gone. Most of all, it truly shook my faith. Now, perhaps you can relate. How many of you in your Christian life have experienced that same sort of emotions and doubts and fears? You know, perhaps it was through a prolonged period of unemployment like mine, or maybe it was the loss of a loved one, or even the death of a dream that you have long held on to. I'm back in the boat for a minute. The waves are crashing over the side. And we've got, you know, the men being thrown around like rag dolls within this boat with each wave coming in. And they're probably yelling and screaming at each other just to make their voices heard above the waves and the winds. And Jesus is there with them, but He's asleep in the back of the boat, right? So for those disciples, their experience is like He wasn't even there at all in that moment. And at times our storms can be like that too. We keep crying out to God for help, but there's no answer. You know, in our minds, we might We might know that he'll always be with us, and we might even agree that he's there with us in our pain, but without a clear awareness of his presence, it's like he's not even there. And that can be the worst and hardest part of it all. You know, it's just us, those in the boat with us, miles from shore in any direction, no safe harbors to pull into, no cell reception. It's just you, the complete darkness, and the storm raging on all sides. No hope, completely terrified. Anyone feeling depressed yet? Now, I don't doubt for one second that Jesus was, even though he was asleep, I don't doubt that he was unaware of what the disciples' state of mind was. I think he let them struggle this way. I think he let them reach this point of absolute despair on purpose. However, at just the right moment, Jesus did hear the cries. He did wake up, and he rebuked the storm, and all was silent out on the seas, right? You know, witnessing this, the disciples turned to each other and asked, "Who is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." This is God, right? They were in complete awe of the man who sat before them. Witnessed his deity in a way that they've never experienced before. They were in awe. Now, perhaps we too should take that time to ask ourselves the same question. Who is this Jesus, and why should we trust him in our storm? Colossians chapter 1, verses 15 to 18 starts out. He says, "He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy." So for starters, he's the highest authority in the land, right? He might have the supremacy. He is the highest authority in the land. He is the one in absolute control over everything. And as the disciples said, even the winds and the waves obey him. Now, there's countless examples that we could look to back this up, but honestly, trusting that he's able really isn't the hard part for most of us. We know he's able. He's God, right? The challenge that we really struggle with, the question we really struggle with is he willing? Just because someone we know has the power and authority to make change does not necessarily mean that they will, right? So why should we expect to have any help from him? Now, Psalm 147, verse 3 says, "He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds." But again, I ask you, why would he do this? Why would he heal the brokenhearted and bind up their wounds? Why would he look on sinful men and have compassion on us in our plight? The answer? His grace. Because when we're speaking of Jesus, one cannot speak of his name without also speaking of his limitless grace. John chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, we have John speaking of Jesus. And it says, "From the fullness of his grace, we have all received one blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." And I'm just going to read a little different version that I've got, because I think it makes it a little bit, I just like the way it's written a little bit more. It says, "For of his fullness we have all received, and grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth realized through Jesus." And you catch that? Grace upon grace. Grace and truth realized through Jesus. It's the grace of Jesus that truly makes the difference. It is his grace that will sustain us, and it is by his grace that he will save us. It is His grace that will provide us with the strength to get up each morning when all we want to do is pull the covers over our heads. It's His grace that will keep marriages from unfolding under the intense pressure. It's His grace that will give us direction when we don't know where to turn and what decisions to make. It's His grace that will comfort our souls and provide us the hope we need to carry us through any and every storm we face. It's His grace that tells us we're loved, even when we can't love ourselves and we don't feel that anybody else does. It's His grace that offers forgiveness and redemption, even when our situation is self-inflicted. It is His grace that gives us as many second chances as we will ever need. The answer is the grace of Jesus. Now, even though a quick end to our pain might be what we want in the moment, the truth is that we have more to gain by experiencing His grace than any instant gratification could ever provide. It's the times when we experience His grace that it sets a new standard for our faith. It's these moments that define a new barrier that we'll never fall past. It's these grace moments that will always be there for us to fall back upon the next time we start to wonder if Jesus truly is concerned about those things that concern us. It is ultimately His grace that will carry us through each and every storm. Peter, having been one of those lucky boys to be out in that boat that night, speaks to us from that experience. And in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7, it says, "Cast all your anxiety upon Him because He cares for you." Again, those aren't empty words, right? He lived through that experience and He knows. He knows the truth in it. Cast all your anxiety on Him because He cares for you. In James chapter 1, verses 2 to 4, a passage that most of us are familiar with, it says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." And most of the time, especially when we're experiencing these major life storms, we're blind to the specifics of God's plan. You know, we can't see His purposes in our various trials, but we can find peace and comfort knowing that His goal is always, always to use our adversity to grow us and mature us and build into us the pieces of our character that we need to become the men and women He created us to be. For us to become whole and complete in the image of Christ. Now, I can assure you that in the midst of a profound pain and uncertainty, the idea that we somehow need this pain in order to be conformed to the likeness of Christ probably isn't going to offer a whole lot of comfort to you. In fact, if we're honest with ourselves, we'd probably rather stay as we are than have to deal with our circumstances. So, this probably isn't the wisest piece of information to share with somebody who's going through amidst the storm. You know, remember that whole thing about speaking the truth in love? Now, this is one of those tidbits of truth that might get you a bloody nose in the wrong moment, right? But when we do reach that point where we realize and finally accept that this storm just isn't going to go away and understand that the only way that we're going to come through it is by leaning on the grace of Christ and drawing close to Him, it really is nice and really is assuring to know that there's at least a purpose in our suffering. The reality is that we all face storms, even once in lifetime storms at some point. But Jesus, He is the one that is in complete control of the intensity and duration of every storm we face. He may leave us in a storm until we think all hope is lost. And at some point in your life, He will probably allow a storm into your life that is far beyond your ability to handle it. But when His timing is right and the storm has achieved its purpose, the storm will clear. And sometimes it'll be suddenly. Other times it'll be more gradual. But in the end, He always hears us. His grace will always be sufficient for every need. And he will always bring the storm to an end, even if that end is a result of a physical death. For me personally, my storm is ending so gradually, it's almost painful. And some days it still is. You know, not being able to find a job in spite of applying for every job I could find, from simple labor jobs to senior management positions. I was freaking out. But through prayer, Jesus gave me the courage to start another business, which was something I swore I would never do again. That experience scarred me so bad, I didn't want to go there. But he opened my eyes and allowed me to see the skills and abilities that he had given me, and showed me a gap in the local marketplace for me to employ them. He showed me how I could use my abilities to write and the technical skills that I learned from a decade in the IT industry to be able to help small businesses to market themselves on the internet. What I desperately wanted and prayed for was an income for my family, but what his grace provided most of all through this business was confidence. 12 months ago, when I was starting this business, now I would not have pointed to it and gone, "That's it. That's what I need. That's what I want for God to do for me." Not once did I close my Bible in the morning and start into my prayers and go, Jesus, please fill my bank account with confidence so I can make my mortgage payment this month and feed my children. It just didn't happen. Now, it's funny to say these things now, but it's important for us to stop and understand that, you know, especially with all the prosperity gospel going around today, that not only does Jesus possess the ability to help and the willingness to help, he's also the only one with the perfect knowledge and wisdom needed to be able to give us what we truly need. You know, yes, we need to eat, and yes, we need a roof over our heads. Yes, he says he'll give us those things, but there are certainly many times when what we truly need is not money. And the disciples, I think they needed a reality check in their faith, and they definitely needed a demonstration of Jesus' authority over nature so that they could confidently proclaim him to be the Christ. For me, I needed confidence. I had completely lost all my confidence. Confidence in myself, in God, in man, in his church. In every way we can apply the word confidence, I lost it. And what good is a man with no confidence in anything? So through a series of challenges he helped me to overcome, he rebuilt confidence in me. By his grace, and through his grace, he gave me confidence. Only this time, my confidence is built on a solid foundation. I know where it comes from, and it's not me. Through the experience of his grace in the storm, I now understand the words of Proverbs 3:26, whereas before I simply knew them. It says, "For the Lord will be your confidence, and he will keep your foot from being snared." He will be your confidence. He is my confidence. Now I know beyond any doubt that my confidence comes from him. And it is his grace that will continue to give me that confidence that I need to keep moving forward. You know, it's been a long process to get us to this point, but we're at a point now where the clouds are starting to clear, starting to part a bit. The sun is peeking through, and the seas are starting to, you know, they're just 8-foot breakers now kind of thing. But even being up here today, it's like a ray of intense sunshine coming down between dark clouds, because I never thought I was going to be given an opportunity to stand up and share God's work like this ever again. Praise Jesus for second chances. So while we all may hate storms and long for calmer seas at times, it's the experience of these storms that grow us, that mature us. And it's during these storms that we are forced to come face to face with our fears and doubts. And it's when we truly find who we are on the inside and what we truly do value above all else. So what can we take away from this? Well, for starters, being in a storm, especially a 100-year storm, it sucks. It's an absolutely horrible experience to have to endure, but it's one that's ultimately for our good. Second, even if you don't feel it, know that others have gone through it before you and have lived to tell about it. So go find them and be encouraged by the tale that they have to tell. Third, don't stop crying out to God. At just the right moment, He will hear you and will respond. King David knew a lot about the experience of dealing with life's storms. And in Psalm 62, verse 1, we read, "My soul finds rest in God alone. My salvation comes from Him." This one I have a different one. It says, "I wait quietly before God. My victory comes from Him." And your victory will come from Him too. And fourth, when you get to the other side of the storm, don't forget to take time to think back on your experience. Ask Jesus to point out all that He has for you to learn from the experience and to reflect on what that experience means to you going forward. And remember, part of the purpose of every storm is to equip us to help others. So be alert and on the lookout for the storm clouds gathering over someone else's life. And when you recognize those mackerel skies and mare's tails, pull your boat alongside. Shorten their sails to match theirs and let them know. Let them know you are ready to sail with them through the other side. And getting back in the boat for a minute, I think Jesus would have us learn that no matter how bad the storm, when we have Him in the boat with us, we have nothing to fear. Fear, on the other hand, it's not so easy to let go of. Letting go of fear requires a clear understanding of who Jesus is, our relationship with Him, and perhaps most important of all, the experience of riding out a storm with Jesus in the boat. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, thank You so much for the grace, Your grace and truth that we realize through You, Lord. Your grace that carries us through every storm. Your grace that gives us strength in all that we need. Your grace that celebrates with us in the joyful moments. Your grace that carries us and comforts our souls when we need it most. You are our all in all, Jesus. And I praise You for that, Lord. And I just pray that if anyone here is going through a storm, Lord, that You would make Your presence known in their lives. That they would know that they are not alone in the boat. I pray that You would just wrap Your arms around them and comfort them. And Lord, if there's anyone who is aware of somebody else going through a storm, Lord, that You would put it upon them to bring their boat onside. Sail with them. Lord, I thank You again for this opportunity to come up and share, Lord. And I thank You for these experiences, no matter how painful they are, Lord. And I thank You that I have had the opportunity to pass them along. And I pray that others will be able to learn and grow, and that You would use it to help them, Lord. They say it takes a smart man to learn from his mistakes. But what is truly rare is a wise man who will learn from the mistakes of others, Lord. And I just pray that You would give us all that wisdom. That none of us would have to grow, and that we'd all be able to build on the experiences of others and learn those lessons. I praise You, Jesus. Thank You. And pray that You would be with us the remainder of this day and throughout this week until we come together again, Lord, to worship You. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Now it's 11:46, but before anybody makes a mad dash for the door for being out of church 15 minutes early, first time ever, I want to leave you with a couple of final questions to think about. First, given the severity of the storm, what do you think the probable outcome would have been had Jesus not been in the boat with those disciples that night? Secondly, without Jesus in the boat with you during your own personal storm, what do you think the probable outcome would be? And finally, do you know for certain that you have Jesus in the boat with you? Thank you very much.